everyone. Welcome back to yet another episode of Safe Space, the ABA podcast. My name is Michelle Zeman. I am your host, and I am super excited about today's episode. This is an episode that, you know, I'm really excited about because we're just focusing a lot on compassion. I feel like this is such an important element to our services. And that being said, I am super excited to bring on my guest for today. Her name is Monica. Monica, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, everyone. So my name is Monica. I am the owner and founder of Creative Minds ABA Services in South Florida. I completely have just a passion for everything that I do. A little bit about my practice is that we are compassionate, a neurodiversity affirming care space. So pretty much like respecting every child, every individual, and just like supporting them to our best of our abilities.
I love that so much. And, you know, more practices definitely need to get on board with that, you know? So
yes, I agree.
Yes, absolutely. So tell us about the mission of Creative Minds and what inspired you to start.
Yes. So the mission of Creative Minds is pretty much to provide the most compassionate, the most neurodiversity affirming care practice out there. Like I said before, it's pretty much respecting everyone for who they are and pretty much like giving that individuality to each person, to each family member that we serve. So the inspiration came from like the deep understanding that I've witnessed within this field because of the challenges that the families that we currently serve in regards to assessing like the quality care and the compassionate care and even the neurodiversity affirming care. It's like a rarity in itself. So I feel like really breaking down those barriers and like giving them access to this is really going to create a practice that's going to be grounded in like acceptance, respect, and obviously like the evidence-based practices, but the basis here is to really give every family and every child the quality of service that everyone deserves. I do believe that it is like a cliche statement of like, you know, everyone deserves quality care and things like that. And that's like a slogan for many practices. However, it is pretty rare for families to kind of like gain access to this. So that's my mission and like what like inspired me to kind of like go down this avenue.
I love that so much. And you know, one of the things that you and I had previously spoken about is some of the unique things that Creative Minds does. You know, you go beyond therapy. You work on addressing basic needs like paying and helping with FPL bills, the light bills, water bills, groceries, that, and plus too, you're serving Medicaid families and underserved communities. You know, that being said, what does it mean to you to provide this level of support to families, especially within marginalized communities?
Yes, this is a very, very great question, and I'm happy to answer. So yes,
love it.
We do service a lot of like those Medicaid families, very underserved, marginalized communities, unfortunately, that many ABA practices, they don't necessarily gear their services to them. It's more so private pay. You have to pay top dollar just to receive the basics of the basics. So for us supporting these families, it pretty much like means that we're breaking down those barriers one by one so that way that they can access and pretty much access the quality services, and also for us to just pretty much like provide an overall whole child approach, a holistic approach and care, not only for that child, but also for the family. because the family, they do face like systematic challenges. They face like, the low socioeconomic status, not being able to afford groceries, not being able to pay for their bills, not being able to pay for exterminators and these different kinds of things. So our role is pretty much to uplift and empower these families to say, hey, you are human and we're here together. It does take a village to raise these kids and to be able to really support you as much as we can, but you don't have to do it on your own. Like, we're definitely here for you. And I feel like Creative Minds and the way that we're like shifting the whole mindset is really gearing to that. And I feel like we're fulfilling the mission here.
And I love that so much because really that's unheard of. That's unheard of in our field, being able to go above and beyond for really any family of that caliber. What's not unheard of, unfortunately, is, oh, you want private pay? We're going to do top dollar. We're going to give you the best of services. But Medicaid families seem to be underserved and, really just underrepresented as a whole. I'm curious, though, from your perspective, why do you think that is? Especially being in Florida, I'm curious to know from your perspective why you think, Medicaid families really are as underserved as they are.
I feel like the like one of my beliefs or like opinions on this topic is that I feel like the families are underserved maybe because of like different kinds of like ecological or environmental barriers that may happen. So for example, it can be like maybe the environment is like in a place that is like quote unquote like the ghetto, for example. What some providers they'll say like, oh, I can't drive over there because my car is gonna get stolen, or I can't drive over there because of this or that. And it's like, I think that that is one of the biggest barriers is like the location of where the services is being held. However, for us, we just travel like wherever the client is going to be at, whether it's going to be in a quote unquote ghetto or in these different types of environments, because we still have to service this human that's like in front of us. It's a small child, it's a family. The family is struggling really, really hard. They just want help for their child and they want to be able to manage these behaviors. They want to be able to juggle everything. But I feel like that to me is like the biggest barrier is like where the location of service is being held. So what I noticed is that some ABA practices, they would ultimately have services like in their personal clinic space because they're like, the safety and things like that. But I feel like just being in their natural element is going to be able to have the parent to be vulnerable, to be really involved in the therapy process, and to know that regardless of what they're going through right now, you're still there to support them, and it you're not looking at their like their hardships. You're not looking for like that giant mansion, or you're okay with going to an apartment that has like one bedroom, and we're not like being judgmental. So a lot of like the practices that I've witnessed here in South Florida is like they do end up being judgmental, and I feel like I don't like that approach because the parents and the families, they don't really want to be in that predicament, They want to be able to, like, everyone wants to have money, But, sometimes, like, life can happen. And, that's why we're there. And that's why we're Creative Minds.
Oh my goodness. I am just so like it's so beautiful to see providers that really uphold, the client as a whole, the whole person, the whole child, the whole adult, the whole family even. And that being said too, Could you explain how you incorporate that whole child or whole adult perspective in your work as a behavior analyst?
Yes, so this is a wonderful question. Very thoughtful. So for our lens and creative minds, we look beyond the behavior. So we are going to consider every single aspect of that person's life, whether it's the child or the mom, the dad, or the grandmother, because we're not just working with the child, the little one, or the teenager, or the adult, which will be the client per se. We're going to work with the family. So that's the key here. So we're going to look at every aspect of it all, everything. So this is going to include their physical health, their environment, their emotional well-being, their school, every single place or environment that we need to kind of dissect these different kinds of things that are happening. We're like playing detective. So we are just collaborating with all of the families, collaborating with all different kinds of professionals out there, whether it's the neurologist, the speech therapist, the occupational therapist, all the therapists in the world, all different kinds of therapies, art therapy, whatever the client or the family may be going through, we are going to collaborate with them so that way that we can all be on the same page. And that's such a lovely, magical process to be a part of. Even if you're collaborating with the licensed family and marriage therapist, you're able to kind of tell them hey, this is what I see on a weekly basis, but this is just my observation. It's nothing set in stone, but this is what I see and things like that. And you kind of go back and forth and have a little dialogue with that licensed family marriage therapist. And once you start to collaborate with them, you'll be able to see that now you've created a supportive framework for growth for that whole child, that whole adult, that whole teenager, that whole family. So now everything is intertwined, and then you have this giant WhatsApp chat that has BCBA, RBT, teacher, principal, or not typically not the principal, but you'll have the teacher, the speech therapist, the occupational therapist, the psychiatrist. You'll have everybody in this giant WhatsApp chat, and you guys are kind of brainstorming. So it's having multiple professionals and experts and different kinds of niches in one space to be able to really support this whole family.
I'm so appreciative of that because I really am a big proponent of collaboration is really what helps the child grow. It's not just behavior analysis. It's not just being a BCBA. It's not just, what we do. Yes, we are a subset of psychology. But we are also one subset out of however many scientists are out there, how many other subsets are out there. And on top of that, the child has different supports for different reasons, So I see, and I love that. I love that you guys get together on that level. You have the school, you have the therapist, you have everybody that is truly involved in the child's life. So from one BCBA to another, I cannot tell you enough how much I respect that because unfortunately that is
Thank you.
not as common as you think. Of course.
Yes, that's the hardest part.
It really is. And that being said, tell me from your perspective, why do you feel that this multidisciplinary approach is essential to have?
Yes, so pretty much I feel like this approach is the most essential that we should have is because you're collaborating with these wonderful providers, whether it's a speech therapist, Gale-Salk language processing, AAC devices, occupational therapy with sensory integration. And so everyone has their specialty. Everyone has their niches. So you kind of are able to collaborate with them for free. And if you do want more additional training, you have to pay. But at least you have you get to have access to that person, and to be able to really tie it all together. Because remember, we're doing like the whole person approach. So being able to like collaborate, this is going to bring different brains, different perspectives to the table. And this is going to really like piece it all together. So that way that it's going to be as natural as possible and create the most growth in that child, in that family, because you're collaborating from all different kinds of angles.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. You know, we think about the whole child. We think about, you know, it's not just one service provider. It's very true. And you said this at the top of the episode. It takes a village to raise a child. And that does include so many different elements. That includes so many different providers. And one of the things that you mentioned just now was about gestalt language processing. You know, of course, when you're collaborating with someone like an SLP, you know, they're going to be ones that are talking a lot about gestalt language processing. I'm curious to know about using gestalt language processing for your families, and tell me a little bit more about why you think it's important, but then also to tell me a little bit about how you incorporate that within your practice as a BCBA.
Yes. So for the GILSOC language processing, we do collaborate with the speech therapist that has that subspecialty with the GILSOC language processing. That way that they can really give us like the framework and kind of like all of the tools that we need to kind of like execute. So for the Medicaid families, it is very hard for them to see the GILSOC language processor speech therapist, because most of them right now are private pay. So you do have to pay out of pocket, or you do have to have a scholarship, but most of them right now are private pay. So what we've been doing is training our BCBAs and our BCABAs so that way that we can learn as much as we can and try to like still collaborate with the GILSOC language processor, like with the trainings and things like that, so that way that we can start implementing these things in our practice. So I feel like the GILSOC language processing is very important or very vital for the families who they want to learn the language. So being able to like use the chunks, use those different kinds of scripts to be able to mix and match those different kinds of steps. For example, if they're like, let's go, and then you'll say like, oh, let's go outside. Or if they're like, let's go upstairs. And then you'll kind of like just keep the same phrase of let's go, but you kind of like change up the last portion. So like upstairs, outside, you change that. So it's a different approach to the common traditional speech therapy, rather than just using like one single word or using like phrases like I want, please, I want more, and things like that. You're going to teach them in chunks. So you're going to teach them different kinds of scripts, and ultimately as they go along the six different steps, they'll be able to intermix them and to be able to like alternate different kinds of things. So I feel like every child is going to be very unique and different, but this is going to really change it up, especially for the Medicaid families that don't necessarily have access to this. But if we are able to train or continuously collaborate with those GILSOC language processors, the speech therapists who have the specialty, we will definitely be able to add that on to our goals and just pretty much like work with what we have, you know, because I've seen a lot in the field where they're saying like, I want cookie, I want milk, I want this, but you know, you never know, maybe that client is a GILSOC language processor and you can definitely use those tips and tricks that you did acquire during the trainings with the speech therapist.
Wow, that is really true. You know, it really is really important to know exactly, like how you can best teach the clients that, you are working on, you're working on these skills with. And I think, those scripts are also really great to have, and it's great that you guys are collaborating together and really making sure that you guys are really just coming together as one. I feel, again, that collaboration is so important.
Yes.
So, kind of on the note of collaboration too, you have a team of 80 members.
Yes.
And yes, and one thing, yeah, which is a lot, but also it just goes to show you how strong your team is, how big your team is, but also how mighty their team is. And that being said,
Yeah.
how do you ensure that your team of 80 members stays aligned with your vision of neurodiversity affirming care?
Yes, so this is another great question. So pretty much we do here in Creative Minds, we do prioritize a lot of ongoing training, a lot of ongoing support. We have a very, very like easy, laid back supervision style. So it kind of like creates the culture of collaboration and connection amongst each other. We do pretty much like regular check-ins every single day. We give feedbacks on the sessions. We provide professional development opportunities so that way that we can keep everyone aligned with Creative Minds' vision of being a neurodiversity affirming care practice. So we're always continuously disseminating that we are a neurodiversity affirming care practice. Most of our trainings are geared towards that. We also give the BCBAs opportunities if they do want to host like a training or something like that. We'll say, okay, perfect. We'll pay you for this opportunity and you can go ahead and train your little sector of RVTs here. Because some of the BCBAs, they'll have like 10 cases and 10 RVTs. So they'll like have a little 10 little RVT pod and they're like, okay, I'm going to train them now about neurodiversity
Aww.
affirming care. So they really like it because they're like, man, like no job has ever trusted me to train people
Isn't
in
that
this
so cool?
capacity.
Isn't it so cool to have that kind of trust and, to be able to give that kind of trust to people? That to me is just so remarkable.
Yes, we're very, very much flexible in our approach, how we like interact with our team members and the rest of the team. So we are definitely like doing the magic work over here.
Yes, I can seriously tell. And even thinking a lot about neurodiversity affirming care and how Creative Minds really focuses on integrating that approach from an owner's perspective and from the master behind the company, I want to know from your perspective and really what does it mean to you and what does it mean to the community that you serve?
Yes, so for neurodiversity affirming care, so it definitely means to me like respecting and valuing all neurological differences, like pretty much like just respecting them all, and that it's just different kinds of variations of just our different kinds of human experiences. Like we're all human. And we should be able to value and just respect one another, just be kind, you know? And the way that I do integrate this approach is by really focusing on the strengths of the individual, respecting their autonomy, prioritizing a lot of like those meaningful goals to that individual and their family as well, always including the caregivers, the stakeholders, the clients themselves, so that way that they feel that this is a safe space and I'm not going to be judged based upon my difference. So using affirming language as well is a big proponent in it as well. But I noticed that it's like a buzzword on social media, So I feel like, yes, you can call yourself a neurodiversity affirming care provider or a care practice, but if you are not living it, breathing it, and doing it on your like yourself, your family, and your everyday life per se, like if you're not doing it for real, like the work, the magic work, then I feel like it's just going to be that. It's just going to be a buzzword. It's just going to be clickbait for people. And again, the vulnerable population that is going to click on that, they're gonna ultimately see that it's not, you know? So I feel like that is what it means to me.
That's so beautiful because again, like you mentioned, yes, this is buzzword phrases at this point, and it's one of those things where it's like we do have to really be careful because of the fact that we can, we see these words being said, we see people saying, oh, I'm neurodiversity affirming, but then, behind that is these people who have private equity come in, and that's just an example, and really just only focused on dollars, and
Yes.
yeah, and they might have practices that are old school, going back to things like escape extinction. You must follow through with the demand in place, and if you don't do what I say, this is going to be what happens. And really, I'm really glad that, you talking about neurodiversity affirming care really is the opposite of what we have seen in our practice, as a whole.
Yes. And unfortunately, many families are still going through practices that are not neurodiversity affirming care. And you do hear a lot about it on social media. And that I do hold space for that because it is like it will be traumatizing to any person, like if you're being forced to do something against your will, you know. And we do have to literally we have to reflect on our practices and to be able to reform and change the way that we implement this. So being able to like disseminate this over and over and over again, even if you have providers that come in, you know, they house themselves at Creative Minds, and then let's say the client's insurance like just evaporated out of thin air, and then they're like, man, I want a client here, but it's like we don't have any client right now, but we're working on it. But you still got to pay your income. So then they go to another practice temporarily, or they may stay there depending on the situation. So they'll go over there, but at least I'm able to disseminate that there is a different way of doing things. And I would definitely invest in that person and that provider. So that way that when they do go to the other practice or they go somewhere else, they move out of state or whatever, a different country, they'll be able to take the knowledge that they got from Creative Minds or myself and to be able to disseminate themselves. So that is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to advocate to pretty much disseminate, explain what neurodiversity affirming care is to as much providers as I can, so that way that they're able to spread it. They're able to spread the word everywhere they go, everywhere they go. Because not everybody's going to be on social media, but if they are housed in Creative Minds, they get that ongoing support, ongoing training. So they will eventually, they will speak up to other people and they'll say like, hey, like that's kind of like weird or like odd that you're like doing forced eye contact, but you know, at Creative Minds, we would never do that. So it's like kind of like that. So like I'm definitely investing in the providers because of that. Like to leave that legacy of like, you know, I was here in Creative Minds, but I did have to leave because there's no clients left. But I will go back if they do have another client. But I'm in this other place and it's just crazy. It's just a mess.
That really, I definitely have seen that myself, and it's really quite sad. you know, to see this happen. But unfortunately, it is all too common in our field. And it just goes to show that companies have to do better. Companies have to do better, you know? So, that being said, I want to go ahead and go into our first code word of the podcast. And that code word is the word growth. That is GROWTH. That is the word growth. Now, we talked a little bit about neurodiversity affirming care, but now let's flip it on to neurodiversity affirming supervision. As a BCBA and a company owner, what does that look like for you?
Yes, so pretty much we're prioritizing the neurodiversity affirming supervision. So what this means is that you are going to be supportive, respective. You're going to have like that goal-oriented approach for my team and also as a supervisor. So being able to be that safe person for the even the RBTs, like being able to, you know, have that autonomy to be able to emphasize that, you know, you have to respect every single person because every single person is going to be unique. The same way, the same thing that we do for our own clients. We respect them, we provide autonomy, we provide meaningful goals for them. So we're going to use that same approach for our team members. We're going to be holding space for them. We're going to be able to provide all the professional development opportunities out there so that way that they fully feel supported. So for example, for this will look like, you know, let's say there's a common struggle would be like turning in session notes late, for example. So for this approach, I would do is that I would contact the RBT, for example, and you know, one-on-one, obviously, we want to be able to like, you know, respect them. So we will either do a Zoom call or a phone call, whatever they're comfortable with. And if we do a Zoom call, they could have their camera off as well because, you know, people can feel like anxious and things like that when it comes to like giving them like feedback per se, you know. And then I will like dive in to be like, hey, like what's going on? Like what are the current struggles that you're facing right now? Like what's happening? And then they'll say like, oh my God, like nothing is really going on, but I don't know how to manage my time properly. And then I'll say, okay, so let's see what we can do. Let's see. So we try to like work out what is a particular like a schedule per se of like when the person, the RBT is gonna write their session note. So we kind of like map it out. Okay, so from 9 to 12, you're with your client. So then you're gonna clock out so that way that you can have your undivided attention to be able to write your session note. So then 12, you're clocked out. So then you start writing your note. So there, that's where the resistance occur of like, oh my God, I don't want to do this. So then on, I'm like, okay, so good. We tackled like where it's at. Like you don't want to write this thing at all. You're just like, heck no, I don't want to do this. So then I'm like, okay, so let's find some like tools. Maybe we can use like AI or something. We're obviously not gonna divulge like any HIPAA content on there. We're gonna keep it as bare as we can. So pretty much like you can even talk to the AI bot and you can upload a sessional template form and it's going to use that template form and use whatever you talked into the bot to be able to convert them together so that way that you have your session note. So we role play that like during the call or during the Zoom chat. And then we also implement it like actually like in person, like while I'm there and we're role playing it. We go outside, we go in the hallway, or we go in our car, wherever the RBT is like comfortable with. And then we start tackling together. And then we're like, okay, perfect. So we did this note together. So now let's see how it's gonna be for tomorrow and the rest of the week. and we kind of like just continue those steps so that way that you know, we're helping the RBT to execute their current struggle, which will be, for example, for this example, is the turning in the session notes late.
Yeah, I appreciate that so much, you know, because, and I really appreciate that you brought the session note example, because that's definitely one where I think this is just a field thing. People do struggle with keeping up with session notes, and it's due to a lot of different factors. Some of the feedback that I've received is, you know, they'll be in the middle of writing their session notes and then boom, target behaviors occur. Or they'll be in the middle of writing their session notes and then there's like parents asking questions, which is not, you know, we obviously want to make sure that we're, you know, providing space for our families, we're providing space for our clients. And then also too, just, you know, there are competing contingencies that ultimately prevent people from writing their notes some of the time. And we do have to hold space for that. And so I appreciate from your perspective that you talked about this, because again, a lot of people don't get grace, you know, for their session notes being late. And while we understand it's because, you know, they're on a specific time crunch and everything, we also still have to remember to give grace where it needs to be given, you know? So I appreciate that very, very much.
Yes.
Yeah. So that being said too, you know, one of the things that we've talked about too is within, you know, your own hiring practices and within your own supervision practices, you know, for those who are new to the field and, you know, for those who are interested in, you know, pursuing a career in behavior analysis, how does Creative Minds help practitioners align with your vision of neurodiversity affirming care?
Yes. So for us at Creative Minds, so that way that they're aligned with the neurodiversity affirming care practice, we noticed that it's like a shocker that they're like, what? We don't follow through, or we don't force them. Like, we don't use physical prompts. Like, that's unheard of. And I'm like, no, there's like different ways of doing it. So we have to really, really provide a comprehensive, a comprehensive, immersive training and mentorship opportunities to be able to have these individuals to be able to learn, like, this is a new way of doing it. And even if they're brand new to the field, I feel like giving them that extra layer of support is really going to set them up for success, because they're brand new to the field. So that will be easier to work with, since they don't have any learned history. They don't have anything that you have to like unhatch. Versus the ones that they do have a learned history, it can be a bit more rebuttal of like, oh, this is what my past company did, this is what my past BCBA did, you know, and it's like, well, you know, that was kind of like harmful, like, to do that thing, you know. We have to listen to the autistic voices and be able to listen to the autistic communities, so that way that we can really change our own behaviors as practitioners. And I feel like the new people that are new to the field, new to Creative Minds, our onboarding process, it does have a heavy emphasis on that we provide neurodiversity affirming care, and that it fully equips the practitioners, the RBTs, the tools to be able to deliver the client-centered approach to this all. And even if, like, let's say, for example, even if they don't really pay attention to the onboarding, we still continue to provide those mentorship opportunities so they can go ahead and they can book mentorships with me. I do have two other BCBAs in the practice that they do mentorships as well, and they have their calendars open as well. So they're able to like continue to disseminate what neurodiversity affirming care is. And we also continuously provide the trainings, and we kind of like gauge if a person is more like rigid when it comes to like using those traditional practices. So we're like, okay, like we need to like implement a lot more training opportunities for this individual because, you know, they're very fixed on, you know, the traditional side of things, which can be very harmful.
Yeah, they really can be. And, you know, coming from someone who has done, you know, interviews, coming from someone who has, you know, been the one responsible for hiring before, you know, I've seen some of that myself, you know. So that being said, how has your philosophy, you know, that Creative Minds is not the place for practitioners focused only on traditional ABA practices, shaped your hiring practices and your team's overall culture?
Yes, so we have been attracting a lot of individuals that they do share the same kind of like mindset. So we're attracting a lot of like those like-minded individuals, which I absolutely love. So like the philosophy is like on par. So we are attracting like the professionals, the paraprofessionals who are going to be very passionate about this client-centered care. And this pretty much, like, once you attract and have an abundance amount of individuals that they do want to reform, they do want to shape up their own, like, past behaviors, because I know that we all may have or may have not engaged in these traditional practices. So they're ready to, like, get on board and just, like, rebrand themselves, per se. So once you have that, like the culture of Creative Minds, the culture of that ABA practice is going to start to be open, creative. Pretty much you're going to have people that are going to be highly dedicated to bring their best, their all, so that way that they can have those meaningful outcomes, not only for the client, but for the family. And also for themselves as a practitioner, as a paraprofessional, as an RBT, as a BCBA. So it's like the same way as the whole child approach. It'll be the whole behavioral team approach, the whole BCBA approach kind of deal, the whole person.
Wow. I mean, it's so amazing. You know, it's so amazing to me because, you know, we see these buzzwords happening, but you're actually living it. You know, you're actually living, breathing, and just being it. And, you know, it's been a part of your upbringing as well, you know. And that being said, how has your own upbringing influenced your commitment to giving back and maintaining that humility within your practice, not just giving back to the families, but also even giving back to your technicians, giving back to the people that you work with?
Yes. So growing up, I didn't grow up in a very wealthy or kind of like affluent family. So I did grow up in a very, I would say, like poverty-based environment. So as I was growing up, I began to learn the importance of what a community is and the power of always giving back, the generosity. So that is actually one of my personal values, is generosity. So to be able to give back always, not to be greedy, not to be money hungry, you know, to always be open. Because the more, I feel like for me, my personal self is like, the more you give, the more you'll be able to receive in return. And it's not that you're receiving like monetary values or anything like that. You're going to be receiving, like, you know, the connection of that person, to be able to build that bond with these families, with the providers. Like, you get to be able to witness that, and that's what I really like. So pretty much like these experiences instilled in me a sense of responsibility, because I was able to create a perfect, not perfect, but a place that is rooted in empathy, generosity, and to be able to support others whether it's the families or the providers, to be able to just give back, give back, give back, especially for those individuals that are facing those hardships. So like they don't have any money to pay for their groceries and things like that, being able to sponsor that, because you never know what someone is actually going through, and you giving back to them is just going to be such a nice, you know, a nice gesture. So that's just like my take on that. I feel like that my upbringing did have an influence to that commitment, because even when I didn't have as much as I do now, I feel like I was still giving, whether it was like a pencil or an eraser or a bag of chips, or like you just have one bag of chips, but you're going to give half away. So it was always like, you know, you're going to give, 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 give. And you do receive. You receive the connection, the friendship, the you receive like peace, gratitude. So you receive different kinds of things. It's not going to be something that's going to be that you can like hold, or not all the times. Like you won't, like maybe somebody can give you like a pin or like a card or something that you can hold. But sometimes you may just get like thank you and things like that, or I'm so appreciative. So that right there is like my biggest motivator to continue.
Wow. I mean, and that's just it too. Like, you know, thank you. And, you know, any sort of like words of affirmation go so, so far. It doesn't have to be, you know, like somebody giving you a present or something, giving you something in return for, you know, you being kind and having a beautiful heart. You know, it's just, you know, this is who you are and this is how you were raised. And the fact that, you know, this is something that the fact that this is something that you really have really just, you know, really embraced as a whole is really such a beautiful thing. And, you know, as we've talked about before, you know, you've told me that you've said your work doesn't feel like work in the traditional sense. So that being said, what drives your passion and keeps you motivated while still balancing advocacy, running a practice, and community outreach?
Yes. Pretty much, wait, what was the question again? Sorry.
Yeah, so no, you're good. You're good. You're good. So what drives your passion and keeps you motivated while still balancing advocacy, running a practice, and community outreach?
Yeah, so pretty much it is to always stay grounded in your mission and your purpose, to be able to always remain on track with your mission, purpose, and with your vision, because this is going to ensure that every, like all the decisions that you make is going to tap back into your values and into your mission purpose. So you have to be able to make those decisions based on that. So being able to have that is going to be key. And aside for that, I feel like investing in your team members to prioritize the quality of services over the quantity of clients that you may have, or like the quantity of providers that you may have, and to never ever compromise on what you stand for. So if you stand for compassion and generosity, never undermine yourself and never like reframe your values because of another person. You know, if they don't fit in, that is perfectly fine, but you are always going to keep your values in place, so that way that you can continue serving your purpose, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, such a beautiful mission that Creative Minds has. I mean, what you do for you know, your community is something that I really hope to see every company take that approach with. You know, that's something that really at the end of the day, like, yes, we are expected to abide by a specific code, but at the same time, we're also human beings and we need to just be kind to one another. We also need to remember where we came from, remember how we started, and at the same time, also know that we have a set of privilege that we have. You know, like in my case, I was very fortunate to have the life that I had. And that being said, you know, it's important for all of us to remember that. Go back to where you were and really think about the things like that, you know?
Yes.
So, yeah. So the second code word that I want to go ahead and announce is connection. So that is CONNECTION. That is connection. I have a couple of last questions for you. So what advice do you give to other practice owners trying to maintain their values while also scaling their own businesses?
Yeah, so that's a good one. So what I would say is to invest in your team. It sounds like so silly to say, but always investing in your team. So as I mentioned before, investing can be like, you know, providing ongoing support, ongoing trainings, being able to provide those reinforcement systems, whether it's like every month you pick out a winner that can win like a massage or a $50 or $100 gift card. Being able to invest in them is going to be the biggest key for a business owner, to be able to just continuously like show up for your team. Another thing that I would say is that to always remain in your values. So whatever your values may be, if it's compassion, neurodiversity affirming, generosity, balance, whatever your values are, the biggest tip is going to be to stay with them forever because it's your values, and not to be afraid that some people may not see your values, some people may not see your purpose or your vision, but that is okay. You hold space for that person, you validate them. And sometimes they may not work out, and that is perfectly fine. But don't kind of like knock yourself down because of your values. So if you are a neurodiversity affirming care practice, continue doing that. You know, we're shaping it up already. I mean, social media is going rampage with this. So I feel like once you're true to yourself, like everything is just gonna get easier.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I completely agree. What do you hope the future holds for Creative Minds and the families that you serve?
Yes. So what I hope is to continue expanding the access to high quality, compassionate services, while still maintaining that approach of neurodiversity affirming care practices to the marginalized communities. So for the families that we serve, my goal is to continue to always empower them so that way that they can thrive in all different kinds of environments and settings, and so that they feel supported along the way. But to be able to gain those new families so that way that they can get a taste of what it feels like, and to also provide those trainings and to provide that mentorship and support to other providers that are not in Creative Minds, but they would like to implement the philosophy or the approach of Creative Minds so that way that we can ultimately change this game of ABA And to be able to see more practices that are more aligned with this approach.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. You know, I feel like, again, you know, companies need to take after that model, you know, and really go back to that. So I love it. And finally, what do you hope listeners take away from your story and the work of Creative Minds?
Yes. What I hope that they what they're listening to about Creative Minds is that no matter where you are right now, whether you're not in Creative Minds or you're in a different practice, you are able to make the change happen right now and right in this moment. You are able to make that change to be able to shift and reframe your mindset, to be able to use that neurodiversity affirming language, those approaches. You're able to do it right now. You're able to reach out to different CEU providers, research articles, different kinds of providers out there, speech therapists and stuff like that. They even talk about neurodiversity affirming care. So right now in this space, you're able to go out and learn about it. That way that you can start implementing it now and to see that, you know, there is some harmful practice when implementing those traditional, that traditional ABA approach. So even if you're not in a company that like Creative Minds or something similar, you're very much so be able to do so in the current situation that you're in. You're able to, you know, advocate and to speak up, to be that voice for that client, for that family, to be able to really disseminate a change in this field that is well needed.
I love that. Again, you know, that just really, I know I've been saying I love that so much, but you know, what you're doing is such a great mission. And I'm so happy that you are out there and you're doing this type of work within, you know, your job and within being an owner, within being a BCBA. I'm really, really happy that you came on today and you talked to me about what you do. I mean, you're really such a compassionate human being, and I think people need to take after that. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on today.
You're welcome. And thank you for having me.
Oh, of course. Of course. Well, before we go, where can our listeners find you and find Creative Minds?
Yes. So I do have an Instagram page. It is at Creative Minds, FLA. And I'm also on Facebook as well. So they can search up Monica Pierre Lewis. And then my little professional headshot will be there. So they can quickly identify me there. And I also have a LinkedIn account, which I use under Monica Pierre Lewis. And I have like the same professional headshot that is on Instagram, on Facebook, that's on LinkedIn as well. So those are the platforms that the providers can definitely seek me out. I'm more than happy to always disseminate this kind of approach so that way that others are able to learn and to be able to really make a change and a difference in this community.
Well, thank you so, so much, Monica. Thank you for coming on again. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I've been your host, Michelle Zeman. Take care. I hope you have a good rest of your day. Bye.
Bye.